This is a show called Brought to Justice. That's a question. Of course, it's implying that this isn't justice. This is, in fact, torture. The indefinite detention and targeted killing of the rule of law is what we're dealing with here. And Andy Worthington, world-renowned expert in this field, on Guantanamo, on torture. In this year's Project Censored book, one of the top 10 censored stories, in fact, the third top story, was Obama's assassination campaigns continuing through the Bush years. So we wanted to just start off by getting into the subject. Could you just sort of kick things off with us and talk about, again, this targeted campaign?
Well, the campaign of targeted killings, are you asking me? Sorry.
Yes, Andy Worthington.
I mean, you know, it seems to me that it's, in a nutshell, it's the Obama administration's replacement for the very messy global detention and rendition system that was established under President Bush. So now, instead of, you know, establishing secret prisons, having extraordinary rendition flights, playing all kinds of games behind the scenes legally to try and redefine torture, the Obama administration now is killing people through drone attacks in various countries, and of course notoriously in a few cases has done this with US citizens as well. So, you know, I would say that's one of the major changes. You know, most of my work, though, is focused on what I think it would be fair in some ways to say is a legacy issue, but one that is proving impossible to deal with, which is the prison at Guantanamo Bay.
Andy Roth here from Project Censored.
Yeah, right.
Let's deal with some of the issues that you describe aptly 10 years on as legacy issues, but still live wire issues. One of the things we did not have a chance to talk about last time was how the District of Columbia Circuit Court of Appeals has effectively rewritten the rules of detention on ideological grounds. Maybe you could talk some about that, and in particular the Lateef ruling of October 2011.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, this is a very sad story, and one that really hasn't been getting much play in U.S. media. You know, I mean, to go back and just run briefly through how we got to what was a good place for a while. You know, the prisoners had no rights whatsoever for the first 2.5 years at Guantanamo. Absolutely no rights. A total black hole. And then they won habeas corpus rights from the Supreme Court, which was, you know, something quite extraordinary in wartime to be giving prisoners habeas corpus rights. It meant that the judges, the justices, had understood that there was nothing these guys could do if, as many of them did, they claimed they'd been caught by mistake. You know, now then Congress under Bush twice passed laws to strip the prisoners of their habeas rights, and then in 2008, the Supreme Court revisited their rights and said, well, actually, Congress acted unconstitutionally. They have habeas corpus rights. And then what happened was that there were dozens of cases that went to the district court in for the District of Columbia in Washington, D.C., where judges finally were able to look impartially at the evidence that was provided on behalf of the prisoners and the evidence that was provided by the government to ascertain whether the prisoners met any kind of definition of an enemy combatant, you know, whether they were involved in any way with Al-Qaeda and or the Taliban. And the judges decided that that had to mean that they had essentially some involvement in the command structure of these organizations. They were part of these organizations in some way. They would take orders if they were not in a leadership position themselves. You know, and such is the chaotic and random nature in which people were apprehended at Guantanamo that they discovered that actually there was no evidence that many of these people were connected to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban at all. And it's a very low threshold for evidence on the part of the government as well. But they decided that even so, what they were discovering by going through the evidence was that people were being imprisoned because of statements that had been made by a handful of notoriously suspect informants within Guantanamo. Prisoners who, either through coercion or through being bribed with better living conditions, had started to tell lies about their fellow prisoners. And actually, you know, this is hugely important because it makes up such a large part of what passes for evidence, it was a great vindication for people like myself and lawyers and other people who'd been studying Guantanamo, trying to work out, separate fact from fiction, and who had, everybody had been appalled and alarmed at the extent to which these unreliable witnesses were being used, that the case against the prisoners in so many cases wasn't the case at all. There was just nothing there. And it led to the release of dozens of prisoners. And then eventually, it started in January 2010, and there were rulings from then until the summer of 2011, chipping away at the decisions that had been made by the district court. And this is in the D.C. Circuit Court, so it's the Court of Appeals. So it's where the government was going when they lost the habeas petitions. And what they found was that, you know, as they knew, in fact, as well, was that there were a number of very right-wing judges in the circuit court, appointees of various Republican regimes in the past, who, for ideological reasons, had pretty much bought the message that had been sold to the American public when Guantanamo opened, that these guys are all dangerous terrorists, that they're the worst of the worst, that an exception needs to be carved out where the law used to exist to carry on treating these people beyond the law. So they whittled away, really, over this period at the standard of evidence that is required on the part of the government, with the result that they've overturned about half a dozen successful petitions. The last 11 or 12 petitions have all been won by the government, reversing the previous trend. And in the latest successful petition that they appealed, which is a Yemeni called Adnan Latif, a man who suffered from some terrible mental health issues in Guantanamo, has tried to commit suicide on numerous occasions, who the government accepts had a terrible car accident in Yemen about 20 years ago, which has affected his, his brain in many ways. He has always maintained that he went out to that part of the world to try and get surgery that would have been cheaper than he could get anywhere else. He won his habeas corpus petition, and then there was an appeal. And gradually, as the appeals court, I think, has got stronger, realizing that they're successfully chipping away, they ended up on this particular occasion saying, well, you know, the only evidence that there is against this man comes from an intelligence report produced pretty close to the time and place of capture, essentially a battlefield report. And they said, well, you know, actually these things have to be believed. In fact, basically, everything the government puts forward as evidence pretty much should be believed. And, you know, this is now where we stand at the moment, is that we've had the court saying, don't really bother testing what the government says is evidence. You know, so long as they claim they have some kind of reason for holding somebody, that really ought to be enough for the courts to carry on to approve the ongoing detention of these guys.
So
these people should stay in Guantanamo forever, essentially.
You're hearing the voice of Andy Worthington, investigative journalist and author of the Guantanamo Files. So, Andy, in some ways, to summarize, it sounds like the Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit is in open contempt of some of the prior Supreme Court rulings, with the result being that prisoners at Guantanamo, who everyone agrees have been cleared for release, are still imprisoned.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the judge who's kind of leading the way here is a senior judge. So, I mean, he's effectively, you know, could have retired, but he's still there. Judge A. Raymond Randolph, he's notorious in Guantanamo circles because he approved every piece of Guantanamo-related legislation under Bush, which was subsequently overturned by the Supreme Court. So he has a track record, of being on the dark side. And, you know, he made a speech to the Heritage Foundation, not too long ago, where he openly complained about the Supreme Court ruling in Boumediene, the case that gave the prisoners habeas corpus rights. He compared it, he used passages from The Great Gatsby, in which the discussion that he chose to quote involves somebody saying that these were people who were careless and made a mess and broke things and left other people to tidy it up. Very, very contemptuous of the Supreme Court's ruling.
Andy Worthington, this is Peter Phillips.
Hi, Peter.
Hi. I'm really curious. What we're seeing here is a decade of imprisonment of people who are likely innocent of the charges they were put in there. We've seen their abuse. We know that there's been torture and waterboarding that's gone on there. There's been appeals and legal processes. And the question, of course, comes up in my mind. I mean, what's the motivation for the government to do this in a broader way? And one answer, I think, is that it's kind of a shock and awe demonstration to not only the world, but to American citizens as well, that if you misbehave in terms of challenging the global empire power, you too can lose habeas corpus, you too can disappear, you too can be tortured. So in a sense, the maintenance of Guantanamo is a form of terrorism on the world population. How would you characterize that?
Well, you know, I think there are elements of that which were clearly in place at the beginning. I think that it's obvious to say that there are elements of that are still in place amongst people of power and influence. So, you know, not just the judges that I'm mentioning, but clearly lawmakers, of both major parties, presumably some people within the Obama administration. I do think there's a conflict between the kind of message that some people want to send out now and the kind of message that was definitely what the Bush administration was sending out to the world, in which a lot of those things were uncontentiously true. The Bush administration was sending a big message out to the world of don't mess with us, or, you know, this is what we'll do. Now I think it's confusing in many ways, and I think there are conflicting aspects to it as to why we're in such a mess. Part of it seems to me that there are people not wanting the humiliation to go on much more. Reaching a point now saying, well, you know, all these people have left. There's been all this negative publicity. Maybe it's time to kind of consolidate things and kind of hold on to the people that we've got there and not really concede that mistakes were made. I feel that there's been a kind of pulling back. There has also been, you know, what I can only think of is a certain incompetence within the administration that, you know, President Obama set up an interagency task force to decide what to do with the prisoners. And over half of the 171 men who are still held, the task force said, you know, the U.S. government has no interest in holding these people long term. Two-thirds of them were approved for immediate release, and 30, at some point in the future, none of them have been released for reasons that, you know, either that because they're foreigners in need of a new home, or because Congress imposed certain restrictions on releasing prisoners, or, you know, two-thirds of them are Yemenis, and everybody in a position of power has issues with the security situation in Yemen.
Andy?
So you've ended up, sorry.
We have about 2 minutes left, and I want to direct our listeners to a website that you've been instrumental in getting going, closeguantanamo.org, all one word, closeguantanamo.org. From there, they can get a link to the petition at the White House's We the People site, We the People website, and I know you've been doing heroic journeyman duty in terms of getting the pressure on the White House. In about 2 minutes that we have left right now, we've heard a lot of criticism about the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012, but you, on your website, had a very interesting and promising article at the end of last month about Section 1028, and how it might give the president some power that we haven't seen him use yet. I wonder if you could talk quickly about that, and then also maybe you could say a word about your film, Outside the Law, Stories from Guantanamo, quickly, though.
Well, the provision in the National Defense Authorization Act allows the administration a waiver if they believe that there are compelling reasons for prisoners to be released, and to do so without having to deal with Congress. Congress has raised these extraordinary barriers to the release of prisoners, saying that, you know, that they can't be released unless the Defense Secretary guarantees that, that people won't be able to get involved in anti-American activities, that no single prisoner can be released to a country where there is an allegation of recidivism of returning to the battlefield. Extraordinary impositions. And this waiver allows the President to release prisoners. Now the question is, will he find the courage to do so? Can pressure be put on him to make him do so? And we're very much pushing those of us who care to try and make Shaka Armour, the last British resident in the prison, the person who's released.
And listeners can learn more at closeguantanamo.org, is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And
Shaka Armour is one of the people who's also featured in a documentary film that I'm the co-director of.
Right, and that's Outside
the Law,
Stories
from Guantanamo.
Right.
Sorry?
Yeah, Outside the Law, that's the film, right?
That's the film, yeah.
And a lot of the things that you're talking about are in the film.
Yeah, they are, yeah. I mean, not these latest developments like the NDA and not actually the terrible situation that we found ourselves in 3 years of President Obama's presidency when, you know, when everything at Guantanamo is just ground to a halt. I mean, the thing that I really want to tell people most of all to take away from this is over half the people in Guantanamo have been cleared for release by the U.S. government, but they're still held. Nobody is leaving that prison. Nobody has left for 13 months alive from that prison. The last two people left in coffins. They died there.
Andy Worthington, thank you.
This situation won't change unless people actually get motivated to do something about it.
Andy Worthington, thank you for sharing.
It's been great to talk to you. Thanks.
Thank you very much for being involved with us.